Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on global warming when we come back. Well, Charles Lyell was one of the pillars of modern geology, and he published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was developed by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes, like Noah's flood, have been strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Well, listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report. And it made that surprising statement. The sun is shrinking. Well, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching now for over 100 years, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 1/10 per century, or 1/10 percent per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. And if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. Going back 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would have been touching the Earth 93 million miles in diameter. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. Well, now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Do you remember? They told us that happened 65 million years ago. 65 million years ago. Do the math. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on this kind of pseudo-scientific lie. And it's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the banner of science. And this is one of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary. It's a commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free of charge. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about global warming. And we broached the subject of consensus. We are assured almost every time that we listen to a newscast, the consensus of opinion among scientists is that global warming is real and that it's caused by carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and that rise in the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is caused by burning coal in coal-powered power plants or other activities of mankind. Now, we've talked about this propaganda subject now in the past. Let's review it just a little bit and take a look at where we're at. There is no consensus among scientists. There is consensus among politicians. There's no consensus among scientists. And the reason for that is scientists all know the truth concerning global warming. It doesn't make any difference what side the scientist is espousing. He knows the truth concerning global warming. Hell, I'm a crummy plumber, and I can figure out what the truth is concerning global warming based upon the facts that they've given us so far. I mean, that's like sitting on a jury. I don't know. The guy might be guilty, but so far the state's failed to prove it. So far the guy's still innocent. I mean, we can just sit here and listen to the evidence. Now remember the evidence that we've seen so far. First of all, decaying vegetation produces 150 gigatons, that's 150 billion tons of carbon dioxide, which is put into the atmosphere every year. And it's absolutely necessary because the plants have to have it to breathe. Just like you and I have to have oxygen to breathe, we get our oxygen from the plants. And the plants get their carbon dioxide from us. You know, you and I, when we exhale carbon dioxide. But it's nowhere near enough to feed all of the needs of the plants. So there's another source for carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that feeds all of the plants in the world. And that's the decaying vegetation. When a plant dies, it decays. And when the decay of that plant is manifest, it turns to carbon dioxide, or at least some of it does. Volcanoes are another source of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. When volcanoes erupt, they give off great quantities of carbon dioxide. The volcanoes give off more carbon dioxide in one eruption than all of the activities of mankind combined for 6,000 years. Now, the total amount of carbon dioxide which is being put into the atmosphere by mankind every year is 6.5 billion tons. We can measure it. It's 6.5 gigatons. 6.5 billion tons. So last time I showed you what that would be like. Take a 5-gallon can of gasoline, walk up on top of a volcano, throw it down in onto the molten hot red lava, and it's going to have a pssst, and there'll be a little flame blow up there. Now, sit there and tell me that that 5 gallons of gas is going to cause the next eruption. Boys and girls, that's preposterous poppycock. And that's the crap that we're being fed. Now, they're not doing it for no good reason. They got a big prize. Al Gore has a big prize waiting for him. He's already been paid very handsomely. He got a Nobel Prize. He got $10 million for his book. Al Gore is being paid very well for his high-profile pronouncements that global warming is going to kill us all. So I took the subject on and I said, let's go back and let's take a look and review the scientific literature. As we look at the scientific literature and the history of it, we find that global warming has been going on in historic times over the past 2,000 years. And we found that global warming lasted for 500 years from 800 to 1300. And there was a great period of global warming, which was greater than the global warming that we've experienced in this round, which began in 1800 and is going on to this day, and we presume may go on for another 200 or 300 years. That's global warming cycle number 1, 8 to 1300. Global warming cycle number 2 is 1800 to, we presume, about 2300. Now, there was a cooling trend from about 1300 to 1800. That was another 500 years, in which we called that the Little Ice Age. Those two events are documented, well documented. There is some controversy as to whether or not they were worldwide. Now, we looked at some science in the present era, going on right now as we're measuring temperatures around the world. There is no global warming going on that we can detect. There has been some global warming going on since 1800, and we presume that over a longer period of time, 500 years, that it is still going on today. But over the short haul, for instance, temperatures actually decreased from 1940 to 72. Remember that part of the story? But the fact that temperatures decreased for a 30-year period does not mean that the overall average trend over 500 years is decreasing. So I pointed that out with the Colorado River. When we're talking about 500 years as the average, we get something different than when we're talking about 30 years as the average. And then we looked at another factor. 100 years ago, when we were measuring temperatures, we were measuring temperatures in New York, in a rural area of New York City. Today, it's not a rural area, it's now metropolitan. These metropolitan areas have a higher average temperature because of the concrete and asphalt. You have to go out into the countryside where you don't have that radiation of heat. You know, when you get in your car on a sunny day and you roll up the windows, it gets hot in that car in short order because of the radiation effect of the sun's energy on that car. It heats it up. Steel heats up in a hurry. Now, if you were trying to take average temperatures inside of a car compared to somebody else taking temperatures outside the car, they're going to be something greater inside the car. Taking temperatures inside of a city is going to give you a higher temperature reading than outside of the city. Now, that's just the way life is. Now, that being the case, they're still taking those temperatures inside the cities, the same places that they were taking them 100 years ago. That's a mistake because you get higher readings. Now, the readings that are being taken in the southern hemisphere are not going up or down. There is no global warming in the southern hemisphere. Any global warming that's been going on over the past century is going on in the northern hemisphere. So climatologists, looking back over history, have now divided, and they say, we're not sure that global warming was occurring globally from 800 to 1300 AD. It may have only been in the northern hemisphere because in the southern hemisphere, we don't have any readings. But in the northern hemisphere, there were people living in Europe. And because people were living in Europe and the Vikings were out colonizing Greenland and Iceland, we've got their written records and their written reports. And they didn't call Greenland, Greenland, because it was white. They called it Greenland because it was in a warming trend and because it was green there. And the ice that has built up on Greenland built up between 1300 and 1800, and it has been melting from 1800 to the present. Now, there is some acceleration in the melting trend in this warming cycle. And, of course, now they're saying, this is the doomsayers, they're saying, well, this is going to spell disaster. And I pointed out, all of the fresh water in the world, if you took every drop in Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, the Aral Sea, and you dumped all of it into the oceans, it would raise the ocean levels by 1%. Because that's all the water there is. The fresh water in the world only represents 1%. 99% of the water in this country is ocean water. I find it hard to believe that taking all the fresh water in the world and throwing it into the ocean, they're telling us, hey, this Antarctic ice cap is melting. Not true. The Antarctic ice cap is not melting. It is still building up. And then I pointed out to you the pictures. Remember, you're seeing these pictures, propaganda pictures. They show you 1968, a satellite photograph of the North Polar region. And it's covered with ice, clear down to the Aleutian Islands. And then they show you another one taken in 2007, and one-third of it's melted off. Boys and girls, it does that every single year. Every single year. The polar ice cap melts back by a third every single year. By August, it's going to melt back one-third. And then it freezes over again. Then it melts back. Then it freezes over and melts back. And what they didn't tell you was, well, we took the picture in 1968 in January, which shows that it's frozen over. And then we took the 2007 picture in August, which shows you that one-third of it's melted away. And then we said to you, well, now see, global warming has melted the polar ice cap. Now, boys and girls, those are premeditated lies. And the spearhead of this lying propaganda over here is a guy by the name of Dr. Schneider. Global warming chief proponent Dr. Schneider admitted he's willing to misrepresent the facts if it will stir up the public over the correct causes. Got that? In other words, we want you to believe that it's caused by greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, being produced by Edison Power Company of New York by burning coal. That's what we want you to believe, and we'll lie to you in order to get you to believe that. Well, okay. So they've been lying, and most people believe it. And I told you, the ruse is going to work because people will believe what they hear repeated over and over and over again. Weapons of mass destruction, Saddam Hussein. Weapons of mass destruction, Saddam Hussein. Weapons of mass destruction, Saddam Hussein. Pretty soon you believed it. And Colin Powell testified to it in the United Nations, remember? And then we all believed it and went to war. And then we found out, no weapons of mass destruction. No weapons of mass destruction. No weapons of mass destruction. All we're talking about here, kids, is propaganda. If you hear it repeated over and over, you'll believe it. It's just the way life is. All right, so now my job is to come in here and take a look at the scientific literature. And last time I said, okay, now looking at the literature from the scientists, there's no consensus. All of the scientists know the truth. The scientists that are advocating this theory, this hypothesis of global warming, are being paid to do that. They're getting paid with their paychecks. Here's a classic example. Last week on Now, David Brancaccio interviewed a fellow that used to work for Bell Telephone. And during this period, about 2003 through about 2005 or 6, the National Security Agency went to Verizon and Bell Telephone and all the big telephone companies and said, we want to listen in. We want to put a splicer in here, and we want to listen into all these emails and telephone conversations. And those big corporations said, okay, go ahead and do it. Well, there was a guy working there, and he was one of the technicians, and he put in the splice, and he knew that they were listening in violation of the Fourth Amendment, and that this was an illegal spying operation on the American public. And David Brancaccio said, well, did you go to any public authorities at that time and report what you knew? And he said, no, I didn't. Why not? Because I was afraid I'd lose my job. Now, let me repeat that. Let me repeat it. Brancaccio asked this guy, he said, did you report that? And he said, no. Why? Because I was afraid I'd lose my job. Boys and girls, every scientist, no matter where he works, is working for the government. In the final analysis, if he's working for Lawrence Radiation Lab, he's working for the government. He's a nuclear physicist. He's a laser physicist. He's working for some college or university. That college or university's got a contract with the government, some defense agency, some agency of government's ultimately paying that scientist's salary. Now, there's an official party line. Now, when the Republicans are in office, they've got their policies. When the Democrats are in office, they've got their policies. When the Committee of 300 says this is what we want, the Republicans and the Democrats scramble to do what they're told. And the scientists who become the iconoclasts and start spouting off, these are the whistleblowers, get fired. Or they get demoted, or they get promoted over into a corner somewhere where they're not going to be heard, or they're not going to be a problem to our official policy. Now, that's just the way the game is played. So last time I said, okay, well now, what is this consensus story? Now, there was a woman that wrote an article in an obscure scientific journal. She never used the word consensus. So the politicians took this reporter's paragraph, and they said, ah, there's consensus. Yeah, there's consensus, all right, and every scientist knows the truth. Every scientist knows that volcanoes put more CO2 into the atmosphere than all of the activities of mankind combined for 6,000 years. Every scientist knows that power plants put in an infinitesimal amount of CO2 into the atmosphere. Every scientist knows that decaying vegetation puts in 150 billion tons of CO2 into the atmosphere. And when compared to the activities of power plants and mankind, it's insignificant what mankind is doing to the atmosphere. But they also know that if they open their mouths, they'll get fired. So this guy, working for Bell Labs, waited until he got his 20 years in, got his retirement, and then he went public. And the scientists that are on the opposite side of the global warming argument are the guys that have already taken their retirement, or that are so secure in their positions that they're not concerned about being fired. The majority, though, rely upon those government contracts, those government jobs, and they're going to follow the party line. That's the bottom line. Forget about freedom of speech. That doesn't exist in science. Now, the second part of Oreskes' definition of the consensus is likewise limited in its scope. Since global temperatures have risen about 0.4 of a degree centigrade in the past 50 years, humankind, according to Oreskes' definition of consensus, may have accounted for more than 0.2 of 1 degree centigrade. Notice the word may have. Well, okay. But it may not have also. I mentioned this to you the other day. I said, when the weatherman says there's a 50% chance of rain, he's 100% correct. He can never go wrong by predicting a 50% chance of rain. Boys and girls, when the weatherman says there's a 90% chance of rain tomorrow, he's 100% correct 100% of the time. He can never make a mistake. Because if it rains, well, I told you it was going to rain. There was a 90% chance of it. If it doesn't rain, he's also correct. Well, I told you there was a 10% chance that it wouldn't rain, and it didn't. Hell, that's not predicting the future. I can do that, and I'm a crummy plumber. So can you. So when we're sitting here saying, well, it may have. Well, it may have. Or it may not have. May is maybe. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. That's he said, she said. That's not science. That's guessing. You want to pay a dollar a gallon for gasoline by guessing? Well, I don't care. Go ahead. What I'm going to do is raise my prices. That's all. And that's what the bottom line is always going to be. When the $250 billion a year is taken in the form of this new carbon tax, all we're going to do is raise our prices to cover those costs. Let me give you an illustration. The other day, you go into a McDonald's and you pay $1.39 for a Big Mac. That $1.39 hamburger is a 5-cent hamburger. Because in 1930, a hamburger cost 5 cents. And today it costs $1.39. And there's 257 taxes on that Big Mac hamburger. And when you take 257 taxes, let's raise the tax. Here's a classic example. Here in Springfield, Missouri, last year, they raised the motel tax by 5%. The motels, you come in there and you want to get a room and it's $50. Well, 5%. Is $2.50. So when rooms were renting for $40 a night, and they came in and raised the tax by 5%, all the motel does is raise the room rate to $45 a night. Then the city comes in, raises their rates by 5%, and the motel raises their rates by $5 a night. Now, a $5 room, when I was a kid, you went to a motel, or a hotel, you paid $5 a night. Hell, the motel room is still $5 a night. The other 95 bucks or the other 45 bucks is to pay all the taxes and the hidden costs that go into all this inflation that you've got. A dollar in 1930 was worth 100 cents, and today it's worth 2 cents. You lost 98% of your purchasing power. And you still take your dollars out, and today you go out and you spend dollars. I bought gas the other day. I mentioned this today. I filled up my tank, and I think it was 78 bucks. And I walked in, and I told this kid in there, I said, "Son, here's 78 bucks. You have a $100 bill." So I said, "Here, pay this bill." So let me tell you, in 1956, I bought my very first car. It was a 1934 Chevrolet, and I paid $50 for it, and tonight I paid more to fill my gas tank than I paid for my first car. Kid kind of looked at me like, "Huh? Huh? What does that mean? Huh?" Hell, he doesn't know what valuable money is. He never saw the time when there was valuable money or a time when there was no inflation. All right, now we're motivated by propagandists, and the propagandists are everywhere. They lie to us constantly. But they don't lie to us all the time. They tell us the truth some of the time. So when they're telling you that there's global warming out there, my God, they're telling you the truth. This global warming's been going on since 1800. Not in the southern hemisphere, but in the northern hemisphere. And the global warming is going on. Is it caused by sunspots? I don't know. Is it caused by burning coal in power plants? Could be. It could actually have added to it, like throwing 5 gallons of gas into a volcano. Has it raised the temperature of the magma? Probably. Have we contributed to temperature rise in the volcano's magma? Could be. I mean, you know, you got this volcanic rock and it's boiling down there and it's 2,000 degrees and we throw 5 gallons of gas on it. We sure as hell didn't cool it off any. Did we raise the temperature of it? Probably. How much? I don't know. Do we then say, "Ah, the temperature of the magma now threatens the health, safety, and welfare of all the people at the bottom of the mountain because Gordon threw 5 gallons of gas onto the molten magma"? Boys and girls, what the hell difference does it make if you get burned to death by 2,000 degree magma or 2,001 degree magma? I mean, come on, kids, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Is the burning of fossil fuels adding to global warming? Probably. I mean, every time I start my car, I'm burning fuel. I'm raising the temperature. Is it contributing to global warming? Probably. How much? It's so insignificant that you can't measure it. It's irrelevant. It's the proverbial flea crawling up the elephant's ass with rape on his mind. All right, now let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. That's George Gordon. .org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use here on the Law Hour, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, when we talk about consensus over here, we hear about that constantly. Scott Pelley used the term. The consensus of scientists is that global warming is real and that it is being caused by the activities of mankind and that we need to take immediate action. And if we don't take action in the next 10 years, it'll be too late. Well, that's what I heard from Scott Pelley the other day on 60 Minutes. And hell, he may believe that. I mean, he's just a journalist like I am, and he may actually believe his own press report. There isn't a scientist anywhere that believes that. None. They may claim that they believe it. Al Gore does not believe it. Al Gore knows the truth. Al Gore is a liar. Al Gore knows that he's lying. Now, that's what fraud is. Fraud is when you know the truth and then you espouse something different. Now, there is a thing called constructive fraud. Constructive fraud, it kind of reminds me of my experience with a lady down at the post office when I was 11 years old. I went down to the post office to get a social security number because I wanted to become a paper boy. Wayne Davenport from the Humboldt Standard said, you got to have a social security number. That wasn't true. I didn't, but I thought I did, and he thought I did, and so I went down to get it. Now, the nice lady at the Social Security office, she gave me a Social Security number, and she told me about the wonders of Social Security. This is in 1950. Now, this is only 15 years old in 1950, and this lady, of course, you know, she's probably a New Deal Democrat and voted for Franklin Roosevelt, and she told me about how wonderful it was, and how lucky I was to have Social Security, and she gave me this little pep talk. And I'm sure that she believed every word of it. But every word she told me was a lie. Not a damn lie, now, not like Mark Twain would say. It was a lie, but she believed it. And that's called a constructive fraud. It's just as damaging. But you can't point to the person and say that she lied to me with a wicked or evil intent. Now, when somebody knows that something is false and they tell it to you, then that's wicked. That's done with an evil intent. And so from my report so far, and I've showed you the people that are involved in this lie all know the truth. And that's because the science is right out there. I'm just picking this right out of Wikipedia. I'm getting this over here from the internet. Here's one, SPPI, Science and Public Policy Institute. It's www.science. Let's see if I can read this one here. Science and Public Policy. Yeah, there it is. Scienceandpublicpolicy.org. Fallacies about global warming. SPPI, Science and Public Policy Institute. You can rest assured that the proponents of global warming have read this report from their opposition, and this opposition group over here has read the reports put out by the scientists that are sponsoring and supporting and advocating global warming and the crisis that is enveloping us all. Both sides are fully informed as to the other side's positions. Now, you and I are plumbers, carpenters, and electricians. We couldn't find this information if our lives depended on it. I wouldn't be able to put this together. I had to go to my boy. Now, he's a computer guy, and he's pretty good at it. I say he's a computer expert. Compared to me, he's really great. And so he goes out, and he puts a big pile of paper here on my desk. And I've looked at both sides. I looked at the proponents of global warming, and I listened to their maybes and mays, and it could well be, and we think that, and our hypothesis is, and blah, blah, blah. And then I looked at the science on the other side that said there isn't any evidence, and here's the history of it, and here's the A, B's, and C's, and here's the numbers, and I put all that together. And then as a juror sitting here, I said, well, hell, you know, if you're 8 years old and if you've a sound mind, for crying out loud, you could put this together. That's why I say Al Gore knows the truth. And he's deliberately lying and misrepresenting the truth. I can defend that in court. I can prove it. Now, the scientists that are supporting global warming have their jobs on the line. And just like the guy I told you about here from the Bell Telephone Company, he's not going to risk his job. He's been there 18 years. He sees a crime going on. He's going to go blow the whistle and get fired before his retirement? No, 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 boys and girls, pay attention. He's going to shut his mouth and do what he's told until he gets his retirement in. Then when he retires and he's got his retirement guaranteed and it's locked in by a law, then he can go public. Then he can come out here and be a whistleblower. And many of these global warming scientists, they wait until they retire. They wait until the coast is clear. Then they come out and they say, well, that's not true and here's why. And that's what I've been reporting to you. This thing of consensus over here is a long article. I don't know where this one came from. Let's see if I've got a something on here. It was written by the Viscount Monckton of Brinchley, put out by SPPI, that's the Science and Public Policy Institute, July of 2007. Consensus. What consensus? Among climate scientists, the debate is not over, by Viscount Monckton of Brinchley. Talking about consensus. Now, applying that rate of increase over the present century and raising it by half to allow for the impact of fast polluting developing countries such as China, temperature may rise by 0.6% centigrade in the present century, much as it did in the past century. Always provided that the unprecedented and now declining solar activity of the past 70 years ceases to decline and instead continues at its recent record level. All right, did you know that sunspots and solar activity over the past 70 years is operating at a record level? Has anybody told you that? Did Al Gore put that into his book? All right, now the outfit that says that they have is called the Science and Public Policy Institute. Now, there is indeed a consensus that humankind is putting large quantities of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, and some warming has resulted, and that some further warming can be expected. However, there is less of a consensus about whether most of the past half century's warming is anthropogenic, which is why, rightly, Oreskes is cautious enough to circumscribe her definition of the consensus about the anthropogenic contribution to warming over the past half century with the qualifying adjective likely. It's likely that. All right, if I were to take 5 gallons of gas and throw it into the volcanic magma, it is likely that I have raised the temperature of the magma. But boys and girls, the activity of the sun on our atmosphere is so much greater than anything that you and I can do down here by burning some coal as to make it the proverbial ant crawling up the you-know-what's hind end. With rape on his mind. And so let's get this thing into perspective over here. They're pointing out that we are throwing gasoline onto the volcano's magma. Well, okay, we don't deny that. Well, you are raising the temperature of the volcano's magma, and therefore you're going to cause a volcanic eruption. Well, that may be, but it may not be. I mean, that's pure speculation. We're just guessing now. Now, science deals with real hard objective facts, such as George Gordon threw gasoline on the magma. He did it every day for 300 days. At the end of 300 days, there was a terrible volcanic eruption. Conclusion. Throwing gasoline on the magma for 300 days caused the eruption. That's pure speculation. All right. After the eruption, George Gordon again threw gasoline on the magma for 300 days, and at the end of 300 days, a violent eruption occurred. Therefore, throwing gasoline on the magma causes volcanic eruptions. That's a coincidence. After the eruption, George Gordon threw gasoline on the magma for 300 more days, and a third violent volcanic eruption occurred. That's science. When you can duplicate something over and over again, that's science. Now we know that works. But until we've duplicated it, that is speculation. That is pure guesswork. We don't know that. Now, of course, we're motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Politicians all know that. Al Gore knows that. George Bush knows that. The Committee of 300 knows that. People are motivated by fear. And what we need to do is to get you people real fearful. There's an agenda at work out there. And that agenda is being fulfilled by people that are in the know, people that are in power, positions of power. And they're manipulating us. They have manipulated us in the past. They are manipulating us right now. And they're going to continue to manipulate us into the future. It's happened past, present, and there isn't any reason to believe that it isn't going to continue. I don't think that humankind is going to wake up to reality anytime soon. Now, that being the case, I can wake up to reality, and I can do something for my own cause. And you can wake up to reality, and you can do something for your own cause. Our objective here is to present you with objective facts, and then you can decide for yourself, well, what do you want to do? In the final analysis, you're going to get this $1 a gallon carbon tax because the majority of people are going to be stampeded into the belief that global warming is real and we need to vote this program in. All right. Now, that being the case, how's that going to benefit me? Well, I'm prepared for it and I'm waiting for it. Let me tell you a little story here. I'm taking a look at Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. I compared that with Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. I took a look at the International Balance of Payments, the International Forecaster, the Privateer, and the McIlvany Report. And what I see is that there are food shortages, and 50% of our food is being imported into the United States. This is a dramatic shift from 50 years ago when we Americans produced all of our own food and exported food into the world's market economy. After having put all of these facts together, I conclude that we're on a collision course with world famine. Then I noticed that President Bush said we need to get 20% of our fuel from renewable resources such as ethanol. I noticed the price of corn doubled. I noticed that the price of wheat tripled. For me, it's an inconvenience. For the majority of people in the world, it is a calamity. So I conclude that world famine is coming. And if you believe world famine is coming, then you ought to stockpile a four-year supply of food for yourself and your family. Now, I notice more and more newsletter writers are putting that into their newsletters. In fact, Bob Chapman this week said you should have a seven-month supply of freeze-dried food and you should be prepared to lose your job for an extended period of time and that you should be prepared for this calamity in the economy. Okay. I don't know where Bob got the idea that 7 months is the magic number. I don't know. 7 months, why not 14 months? Why not 21 months? Why not 7 weeks? You know, when you take a look at the numbers that are coming out, and then you try to extrapolate that into the future, what are you relying upon? I rely upon Bible prophecy. I rely upon Moses, who got the word from God himself and wrote it in Deuteronomy 28. That's where I got my information. And my conclusion is you need a minimum 4 years. And if we look at the example of Joseph in Egypt, the number is 7 years. And I recommend to all of my students that they have a 4-year supply of food on hand and that they have a seed bank and that they have a means of producing food continuously over the 4-year period, which would take you for at least 7 years. You ought to get something out of your garden. I really think that 7 years is more likely the number than 4, but I would recommend a minimum of 4 years. Why? I got it from the Bible. Now, most people would laugh at me and say, well, they think that's preposterous. Bob Chapman, I don't ever remember Bob Chapman saying, I got this from the Bible, but I noticed this week he said 7 months. Boy, that's a step in the right direction. Now, I've been watching the Mormons for years. They've been advocating 2 years. I looked back in Mormon history. For all you Mormon people out there, did you know that your church advocated a 4-year supply? When they started, Brigham Young set a 7-year supply, then they lowered it to 4, then they lowered it to 2, then to 1, and the last I heard it was 72 hours. I mean, after all, we got FEMA. And you saw the brilliant job that FEMA did in New Orleans. If I was a Mormon, I would go back to the 7-year supply. I think Brigham Young had it right to start with. And I'm not a Mormon, and I'm not out here advocating Mormon philosophy. I'm just here to tell you that there were people before me, a long time before I ever came on the scene over here, that took a look at the world's geopolitics and said, you know, this ain't good. Now, as we apply that lesson to global warming, how is that going to benefit me in the future? I'm sitting here saying, get ready for a $1 a gallon carbon tax. Start programming that into your business. Don't wait until the price of fuel goes up. I watch this almost every day. I saw the price of diesel the other day hit $3.76 over here at the local DX station. That's $3.76 a gallon. Now, I got to buy diesel, just like, you know, everybody else. And I got to pay $3.76. But I'm prepared to pay $4.76 and then $5.76. I'm psychologically prepared for it. I'm monetarily prepared for it. And I'm preparing my business, and I'm preparing my business model. I'm preparing my future based upon $5.76 a gallon diesel fuel in the near future. Get ready, kids. Wake up. We have an inflation rate that's been going on for the last 7 years that's been accelerating from 6% to 15% today. The inflation rate today, as I speak to you, in March of 2008, note this number down, March 2008, this program, the inflation rate's running 15%. Ben Bernanke says we're going to increase the money supply. Henry Paulson the other day said, we're going to do whatever needs to be done. We will use whatever means necessary to protect the economy. That means to protect Wall Street and the Wall Street investment firms, and to hell with the dollar. The dollar is at 70 as I speak, 70 or 71. That's down from 121 about 2003 when we hit our peak. The dollar was at 121 cents. Today it's down to 70 cents. It's on its way to 40. Prepare for it. The dollar a gallon carbon tax is coming in your future to a city near you, caused by global warming, which doesn't exist anymore than the terrorists exist, except in the minds of our politicians. We don't have a terrorist problem. Never have had. We believed that we did. We were persuaded that we did. And many of us still believe that we do, and we are constantly bombarded with the news media, terrorists, terrorists, the terrorists, terrorism, the terrorists, terrorists. Boys and girls, you don't have any problems with terrorists. You got problems with $3.76 a gallon diesel fuel. You got problems with 15% inflation. Boys and girls, you got problems with the doubling of the corn price. You got problems with the tripling of the wheat price. We don't have any problems with terrorists. Osama bin Laden didn't cause me any headaches. But my God, my government is. George Bush sure as hell is. Al Gore sure as hell is. Yeah, we got some bad problems out there, but it ain't caused by terrorists. It ain't caused by global warming. It's caused by politicians. Now, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we got more coming. Actually, when we get down here on the bottom line, we're reaching a point of no return. And the international forecaster this week was so dire. You know, I'm kind of a grizzled old veteran. And as old as I am, I have never heard of an investment bank going belly up. Bear Stearns went belly up this week. While I was doing this series of programs, the greatest economic catastrophe in my lifetime has occurred this week. Bear Stearns, one of those preeminent investment banks, went bankrupt this week. They were just bought out by J.P. Morgan for $2 a share. Their stock was $70 a share a couple of years ago. And listen, they're just the tip of the iceberg. All of the investment banks are on the ropes. All of the big banks are on the ropes. The American economy is toast. We're upside down. And I heard some guy the other day said, America is the richest nation in the world, and there isn't any reason why we shouldn't have national health care insurance. That sounds like a wino down on Skid Row talking about buying the Empire State Building from the Helmsley Estate. I mean, this guy doesn't know where his next quarter for a bottle of Ripple's coming from, and he's talking about buying the Empire State Building? The United States of America is bankrupt upside down with no hope in hell of ever paying off a quarter's worth of the debt, and we're sitting here talking about national health care insurance, and these crazy politicians are out here telling you people, we're going to have national health care insurance. We got to have a national health care policy. You people can't put beans on the table and you're talking about buying a health care policy? Huh? My God, have we taken leave of our senses? And we're talking about global warming and we're going to tax ourselves another dollar a gallon? The price of wheat has tripled, the price of corn has doubled, and now you're sitting here saying, yeah? Yeah, I think we need to have another dollar a gallon tax called a carbon tax on gasoline. $3.76 a gallon ain't enough. I think $4.76 would be better. I tell you, boys and girls, we have gone stark, raving mad in this country. Absolutely insane. We are so detached from reality that you could check in to an insane asylum and get more rational conversation out of one of the inmates than you can get out of a damn politician in this country today. National health care insurance. Global warming. A consensus from the scientific community on global warming is preposterous poppycock. And the scientists that are advancing or espousing it are locked into their jobs, and they have to espouse it to keep their jobs. They are paid professional whores. Nothing more and nothing less. We used to have in this country a sense of honesty and integrity. There was a time in America in my lifetime when a man would not lie for his job. He would not lie for money. And the other day on David Brancaccio, there was a man who admitted plainly that he would not blow the whistle because of his job. That he would go along with the lie. He would go along with the crime so long as his job was at stake. It hasn't always been that way in this country. There used to be honesty and integrity. Even in politics, we used to have some honesty and integrity. Boys and girls, we don't even have it out here on Main Street anymore. Even you and I have now become liars and hypocrites in the pursuit of profit and gain. Hey, I'm out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here on today's program that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.